Senator will come to order. Senator from St. Clair.
Mr. President, would you please send that amendment back?
Please send the amendment back. We are back on Senate Substitute Amendment 1 for Senate Amendment 1. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? On the substitute amendment, Senator. Hearing none, Senator from the 15th. I was going to recognize you to close.
Thank you for your service as president today.
Any other discussion on the Senate Substitute Amendment 1? Senator from the 2nd, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
So, Mr. President, where are we currently at?
We're on Senate Substitute Amendment 1 offered by the senator from the 15th. Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Substitute Amendment 1?
Yeah, we're closing, which
hearing
gets us,
yes. None. Senator from the 15th, you're recognized to close.
I close.
Senator from the 15th renews his motion for the adoption of Senate Substitute Amendment 1 for Senate Amendment 1. As many are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted the substitute amendment. We are back on the Senate substitute. Senator from St. Clair.
I have an amendment again. It's the same amendment that we discussed. I sent my only copy forward, I think.
Do we have the amendment at the dais?
You can go ahead and set it up. That's fine.
Okay, and it's properly drafted.
Fine.
Okay.
We have had a discussion, Mr. President. Maybe we ought to, I guess we need to read it again.
Secretary,
probably.
Please read the amendment.
This is not it. Senate Amendment 2, offered by Senator Scott to amend Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 618, page 2, section 376.1224, line 27 of said page, by striking the following, quote, "are nutritional supplements," close quote, and further amends said bill and section, page 3, line 16 of said page, by striking the following, quote, "without limitation," comma, close quote.
Senator from St. Clair, would you care to explain
your
amendment?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move for the adoption of the amendment. We've had the discussion. This is creating for this plan, for this mandate, mandates for expenditure that no other insurance plan that I'm aware of has, and those words need to come out, and I would be glad to answer any questions.
Senator from St. Clair has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment 2 to Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 618. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 15th, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
To inquire, Senator from St. Clair.
Does the Senator from St. Clair yield? He does proceed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator. I want to just talk about your amendment here for a second. You've stated the objection but your reason for offering the amendment on the nutritional supplement. I want to talk, though, briefly about the medical devices necessary.
About?
So your amendment takes out the without limitation. Is that really the only substantive change?
And takes out the without limitation for the devices and takes out the supplements, which I know of no prescription plan
that pays for
supplements.
Right. I just want to understand. So if we take out the without limitation, what does that mean in a typical insurance policy?
That the ones under the necessary items within the scope of the plan are covered.
Are still covered.
Yeah, I'm not trying to get rid of medical equipment. I think that the phrase without limitation is an invitation for unlimited spending.
Okay, I appreciate that. So under your amendment then, if it's still prescribed as medically necessary, for example, for a child who's nonverbal, who needs a device to help them communicate, that isn't excluded. You're just saying you're taking out the without limitation.
Right.
Okay.
No, I'm not trying to exclude anything that's necessary, but I'm trying to bring it in line with wordage of any other insurance policy without an invitation to spend.
I just want to understand your amendment. Thanks.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment 2? Hearing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
Senator from St. Clair has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment 2 to Senate substitute for Senate Bill 618. Is many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted Senate Amendment 2. We are back on the Senate substitute. Does any senator desire to be heard on the Senate substitute? Senator from Howell, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
Yes, Mr. President, I have an amendment. It's been distributed, and I ask for a waiver of the reading.
Hearing no objection to the waiver of the reading, Senator, proceed.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. This amendment, as we've watched the health care debate unfold for the last several years, one of the ideas that we hear from the federal government right now on the ways that we can solve the crisis in health care is to open up competition between states. It's kind of frustrating to me that all of a sudden people have great ideas that 10 years ago the ideas were there, they just didn't want to do them. And now when you reach a crisis and you try to begin the process of lowering cost of health care, all of a sudden we start coming up with ideas that we should have acted on several years ago. And what this does is simply begins the process of bringing competition into a market. When you have competition within a market, you usually get a better quality product at a lower price. And what this amendment does is it simply opens this up to states that are surrounding us for us to open up the field of competition. Missouri is in a unique position. We have 8 states surrounding us. I border Arkansas, and a lot of commerce goes back and forth. But from some stupid law, we are unable to do commerce with insurance companies between state lines. And what this does, this amendment simply opens it up to competition so that we can get a better price and a better product in a free market system. So I would be glad to try to explain the amendment further. If not, I renew my motion.
Senator from Howell has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment 3. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Hearing none, Senator, you're recognized to close.
I close.
Senator from Howell renews his motion for the adoption of Senate Amendment 3. As many are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted Senate Amendment 3. Back on the Senate substitute, does any senator desire to be heard on the Senate substitute? Senator from Howell, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
To inquire of the senator from St. Charles.
Does the senator from Second yield?
I yield, Mr.
He does. Proceed.
I want to thank you for, you've done a lot of work on this. I know how much summertime is to everyone that's out working, and I commend you for the work that you did on this last summer and the year before. But, I want to clarify some things, because a lot of people, that when we have differing opinions, that there's a lot of accusations thrown around, especially by our members of the press, that you work for insurance companies if you oppose this. But I want to understand that and make it clear that this is not going to be paid for by insurance companies, because insurance companies, what they do is when there is an added benefit or mandate upon them, they simply pass that on to the customer. So, you can stand there and make that, and a lot of people, can make that accusation, but ultimately the small business owner that is paying the bills will ultimately pay the price of any action that we do in this body, because it just becomes part of doing business. And I just want to stress that is who will pay the final premium of any insurance. It is the small business owner at the very bottom, because that is the person that ends up paying the bills. Also, there's a lot of us in this body has recognized this disease even several years ago. I remember when I was chairman of Appropriations for Mental Health, we added funding to this program, and this body has spent a lot of appropriated monies to this disease that we're discussing today. In 2006, $34 million of the state budget went to fight autism. In 2010, this year, will earmark or spend approximately $78 million. So this body is, that's doubled in 4 years the amount of funding that we have put into this in GR terms. So a lot of us, you know, through the budget process have done whatever we can to try to alleviate some of the problems that we have had with this disease. And I think that I want to thank a lot of the members of this body that worked on these issues through the budget process. I think that there's not too many programs out there that in this day and age, even through times of lower revenues, that we have doubled the amount of funding that goes to a program. Can you think of any others that has grown, you know?
Tax credits.
Double? Well, that's not, that's a different issue that we can talk about a different day. That is not, tax credits don't go through the Department of Social Services, Department of Mental Health. That is a commitment that a lot of us made in this body and have, really proud that, been able to double the funding for that program. I'm sitting here at a loss trying to figure out if any other programs that we've done and actually doubled the amount spent in 4 years.
I'm sure there's numerous fear to go through, and especially in programs in their infancy when something starts out, and it maybe starts out as a pilot and then it grows. I think you could find many, many instances. But I think that goes to show that this rising, as the CDC has said, it's an epidemic for our time, that this is something that the state is going to continue to have to deal with exponentially because of the amount of diagnoses that are happening and the societal cost and the cost of the state. So I think this is a proactive way to make sure that the therapies that have been proven are getting to the children and to the individuals with this disorder, and so that it eventually would keep the state from having to continually add appropriations to this and to this and to this program and try to band-aid it. And I think this is really a proactive way to save the state money long-term, because you will see the increase, and we've already seen it. You'll see it in the schools, and you'll see it in the Department of DMH and Social Services that's currently happening. So I would say that the cost-benefit to doing this will stop that from happening and will actually be a positive for the state.
Yep. Let me try to just clarify. And I heard the word filibuster a while ago. There's no intent of that. We're gonna get a vote on this, and I know how it's gonna go. So I just want to make points relay to you some of the concerns that I have with this legislation. Now, this only affects small businesses that have insurance. Is that correct?
I'm sorry.
This only affects small businesses that provide insurance for their employees.
This bill?
Correct.
No, it affects, other businesses.
Well,
as
in
well.
Terms of let me rephrase the question. Businesses of 50 or less, small businesses of 50 employees or less. This only affects businesses that have insurance for their employees. Is that correct?
Well, if you're have an insurance plan, then it's affected us, and we're not covering the uninsured.
So if a small businessman makes a decision to provide an insurance plan for his employees, this only affects that business. The small business that does not provide insurance for his employees, it has no effect upon them.
You're not covering the uninsured. You're not covering you can't cover a insurance plan that doesn't exist.
Yeah, I'm kind of frustrated because when you look at the polling and I'm a small business owner, that what is the number one reason small businesses do not offer insurance to their employees?
What is the reason? What is the reason they don't?
I don't like that rule when you have to have your back. I like to look at it. So kind of sideways. There you go. I'm leading you on here. I'm playing my part as the attorney.
I didn't.
But cost to provide insurance for their employees is the number one reason small businesses don't offer insurance to their employees. Especially when in a time of age, what is the average cost to small businesses now that have insurance premiums? It's running. I have small businesses tell me all the time there's a 10 to 12% cost increase. I had a gentleman that was down, was operating in my business the other day that said he got a 40% increase just in the last year. And a lot of those increases is because government coming in and mandating things upon business, which ups the cost. You know, that's one of the frustrating things about the health care debate we have today, is because we refuse to acknowledge what the real problems are and make the tough choices to try to lower costs. What we do is try to do a Band-Aid approach. And, you know, one of the great examples that Senator from Cape once talked about was LASIK surgery. You know, LASIK surgery actually has gone down in half the price as it used to be, because you have free market forces where you have to go out and compete. But we as a society do not do what the tough choices to try to bring back free market principles into healthcare. So as a result, we probably average 10 to 15% increase in insurance premiums every year for small businesses. So a small business owner has to make the decision whether to supply health care for his employees. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, small businesses like to keep good health. And what they try to do is provide a benefit package, wages, that they can afford so they can keep good employees. But, you know, what's frustrating to me is when I run for office, well, on the party that I run for, is one of the things was is that we're going to fight for small businesses, try to help health care more affordable for small businesses. I wasn't able to go to caucus this year because my small business is very busy at that time of year, and I actually make the decision to stay home and try to spur the economy and try to make a living rather than go to... This year was in St. Louis and sit around and schmooze with lobbyists and,
what was your
and my fine colleagues. So
it was OzarkWings.net.
OzarkWings.net is the website.
OzarkWings.net?
That's my web that people can check out.
OzarkWings.net.
OzarkWings.net. Actually, so I make the decision in my small business to stay home and work rather than go and spend time with my illustrious colleagues and eat lobbyist meals and enjoy myself. So, but I know that a lot of work was done there. And one of the things that surprises me is there was our goals this year that we have for our caucus: creating jobs, protecting taxpayers, and our future. And under those, one of those was we will help families survive by keeping and recruiting better-paying jobs with benefits, and focus on protecting and supporting small businesses of 50 employees or less. Now, I don't think any of us on our campaigns when we run says, I'm going to go to Jeff City and I am going to pass mandates down on small businesses that increases their cost. Whatever, and if you find me a piece of campaign material that one of us did that put out, I'll sit down and shut up, because that person is actually doing what he said he was going to do. But I think every one of us run on a platform that we were going to come up here and fight for small businesses, because
and
it's the
Senator,
backbone of this country.
I think you hit on a great point that this bill will generate jobs, because right now there's no one to service.
It only affects the businesses that buy insurance.
Yeah,
there's small companies right now that can't afford insurance. It will have no effect upon
them. Because there's not that many people now, because there's not that many people can afford it. So this actually
many people for it. What you're doing is you're coming in, and businesses that strive to provide for their employees will pay even a 1 to 2% slightly higher premiums, what you're talking about. But it widens that gap between the small business that wants to provide insurance for employees and can't afford it. You continue to widen that gap. And again, what you do is every time, I don't care what causes insurance premiums to go up, every year a small business looks at the bottom line. And, you know, right now the bottom line doesn't look very good. You have high unemployment. You have rising costs. And if you study the basic economic rules, and I don't think the basic economic rules have been reversed, but when government's borrowing money, and he's spending money like drunk sailors, but I heard the saying the other day that even drunk sailors quit when they run out of money. We just simply up our debt limit to $14 trillion to continue to borrow. But a small businessman right now is looking at a situation where, am I going to expand in this economy knowing that I'm going to be faced with higher interest rates and hyperinflation? So you're sitting here trying to figure out, do I expand or do I huddle down and try to weather the storm that I know is coming? So your small business, and I'll give you an example. Everybody likes to use examples. You know, the president uses examples. But I was talking to a gentleman yesterday. He was up here talking with me, and he has 16 employees. And he says, I need to lay two people off right now, but the one that's been with me, the least, is nine years and has four kids. And he says, right now I just don't want to go put him out on the job market with no insurance, because he spent $105,000 last year for health care for his employees. You know, he doesn't have to do that. He can drop it and save $105,000. Now, those 16 families that are employed by him, that would be tough on them. That would put 16 employed families out on the street with no insurance. They'd still have a job, but they wouldn't have any insurance. But he makes the decision to spend $105,000 a year to insure those employees. Your cost alone, even though it's, you know, let's say 2%, we're going to add $4,000 onto that bottom line cost. Is that going to be the straw that puts him over the back, over the hill, that straw that puts over the hill, but that he makes the conscious decision next year, since my costs have gone up, is this the year I drop insurance on my employees? You know, I don't know. You know, he's at a decision right now to where he either has to suck it up or he has to lay someone off with four kids and put them out on the street in this job market with no insurance. And that's the decision that every small businessman around this state is making right now. And we, in our esteemed wisdom, decide that we're going to do this in a year that we're facing 10% unemployment with probably 20% actual unemployment, and still losing job market, still losing people out in the job market. But we're going to come in and we're going to put a added cost on the small business in this cycle.
I don't think you're taking a look at the savings to the small business.
You know, I see. Say, you know, I've dealt with state budget every year. Did you know that? Did you know the statistics show that for every dollar we put into tourism, we get $4 back? And I've never found that $4 in the state budget, because I hear that from every department out here of how if you invest a dollar with us, you'll get two back. I don't think it's going to fly when I go back home and tell that small businessman that his $105,000 premium he's paying for his insurance, it, even though it went up $4,000 to $5,000 this year, look how much you saved somewhere else.
Well,
I just don't know how that flies.
You have to take into the account, though, that the productivity of the worker, of a healthy worker, if you have a family that's struggling with a child that is screaming all day, that sleeps maybe 1 hour a day, and it just is just driving that family insane, the productivity of that worker is going to be less. There's going to be missed opportunities. The person might have to take a second job just to get pay for some type of a therapy. There's probably going to be a bankruptcy. The divorce rate is 10 times as high. So I think you can calculate into that there is a productivity increase when you're not having to deal with these types of situations.
You just explained the same situation that small businessmen go through every day, trying to balance a budget and a checkbook, trying to figure out if they're going to be a profitable for another year. You know, it's the same situation, just different people. Because, you know, it is frustrating to that person knowing that 16 people's insurance depends on him making a decision or not. So, you know, everybody goes through those decisions. It doesn't matter. You know, I had a parent in a nursing home. I made decisions like that. You know, it's unfortunate, but that's life in general. A lot of times, we all have to make decisions. You know, the biggest decision that small businessman makes is whether I continue insurance for another year, and because that has a direct effect. And you know, it's frustrating to me that, you know, I used to belong to a lot of small business organizations, and I remember that they always showed up every year to get their premium, but when it come to standing up for small businesses, it seemed like they were swallowed up within the steamroller of government, the way the steamroller role of government these days. So, you know, it's frustrating to me that the people that are supposed to be up here fighting for small business, I've heard much from them, but I guess it's the silent majority out there, people that, because 92% of our state's employed by small business. But so I guess I have to relieve that little bit of frustration.
I'm confused.
But at some point, you get to the point of diminishing return where your intent to cover more people will result in actual number of people insured going down. Now, whether this does it or not, I don't know. But I just know that the direction we're going, when you have, you know, minimum 8 to 10 to 12% rising costs in health care every year, why do we continue to put mandates down on small business, and that to me incentivizes them to just totally drop insurance and put their employees back out with
I look back at the mental health parity bill that had the exemption, which is, you know, we've even made easier, and that you supported that bill and you voted for it. So
I don't remember that. Did you run my records up?
Yeah, on Senate substitute, Senate committee substitute, House committee substitute.
Now, the
House
mental health parity, I was in the House when that went.
Yeah, you're in the House. 144-14.
I wasn't one of the 14.
No.
Well, I'm...
You weren't.
You know, I've learned a lot since then.
So, I mean, it's one of those...
I did vote against Propecia, a mandate, that voted against that. I remember that one.
Was that a...
Yeah, that was Betty Thomas's one over there.
So, Senator, I understand your concern, and I think that we have really tried to alleviate some of that concern with some of the steps that we have taken. And I think if you take into consideration the vast amount of people that are dealing with this, the number of diagnoses, the amount of out-of-pocket costs that people are currently spending, the number of bankruptcies, the societal cost, everything, the savings to the state and the schools and the DMH, and you look at the fact that this is going to provide a healthier workforce and things of that nature, and they do have that exemption that they can do, which we made easier even than the one that most people in this body supported a few years back, that I understand your concern, I understand where you're coming from, but I think that it was a policy decision based on the current epidemic of our time and the parity of, you know, Alzheimer's, Lou Gehrig's and stuff, that this is a policy that we should be moving forward with.
And I want to clarify, it only will affect small businesses that have insurance for their employees.
No, it'll affect large businesses, medium-sized businesses, as long as you are not a self-funded ERISA plan. And those are your big Boeings.
Let me rephrase. Businesses, it'll affect businesses all over 50 employees. And then it will affect all small businesses, 50 employees and under, that provide health care for their employees.
It will be applicable to all group plans in the state that are offered by employers that are not self-funded, your giant self-funded plans like your Anheuser-Busch and your Boeing.
Okay.
It'll cover all those.
One more question I want to ask you. If you're a small employer, usually you have a plan that you have a group rate with your employees. Does this disincentivize me to hire someone that has an autistic child because it could be detrimental to my rates?
I would not think, especially with the opt-out waiver that is there.
But
if you
the
have
opt-out
a
waiver
employee
still,
and you're not going to drop them because
it's still
going to
cost my small
diagnosed.
Employer with. Spends $105,000. It's still going to cost him $4,000 to $5,000,
yeah,
to discover that it does.
You can make that
cost
same
cut.
Argument that, you know what, I'm not going to hire any women because they have babies, and that drives up your cost of insurance.
Well, small business
I don't
people
see
would
that
never,
happen.
You know, I don't want to get. They would never do anything like that. And that you're proposing.
But I mean, that's just kind of the same type of a thing. It's like, wow, you know, I'm only going to hire 25 to 40 healthy males because I don't want anybody too old and I don't want anybody that could possibly get pregnant. I mean, they're not doing that now, so to say, well, I'm sorry, I'm not going to hire you because you have a child that got diagnosed on the spectrum. I just don't see it happening.
Okay. I'm going to... I got another amendment to offer, but I'm going to stop our inquiry because
fun.
2 years from now, if both of us are, well, I'd say both of us will be here. Yeah, you're up this year. Right? We'll be sitting here trying to figure out how we stop the rising cost of health care, especially on our small businesses. And we'll also be discussing what we do about it. And we'll also be discussing why we have a high number of uninsured people who work for small businesses. And we'll think about the conversation that we had.
And I'm going to add one thing to that, Senator, and we are going to be praising the senator from the Howl for putting forth, you know, a health care reform amendment on this to allow policies to be sold across state lines. So I think that you have, with helping me pass this bill, you are instituting health reform. That's something I think 2 years from now we'll be saying,
do you know that's something that Republicans, when they were in charge at the White House, never got accomplished?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess they
because
got,
now
lost that memo.
The number one, if you ask a Republican now in Congress how we reduce health care costs, they'll say, get competition between states.
And that's
open
exactly
up competition.
What your amendment, so I'm glad that you're going to help me
and
pass
for 6 years they were
so
in
that
the
we
majority.
Can reform health care in the United States.
For the six
and
years.
Senator from Howell, we're going to be talking about you 2 years from now, singing your praises.
For the 6 years they were in the majority, never once did this amendment get offered, and we got it done here today. Isn't that amazing?
Well, I do believe that you're trying your hardest to go there to make that happen, so maybe if you'd have been there, you could have offered that like you offered it here today and help us make health reform
possible. I'm trying
possible,
to sit and be the balance because I've worked hard to get $78 million into a state budget that helps autistic kids. And then I'm also trying hard to fight for small businesses that employ 92% of the people in the state and are the backbone of this economy and will be the entity that brings us out of economic depression, which somehow the federal government doesn't understand that small businesses hiring is the only thing that will get us out of economic bad times.
And I think
and they're the ones that don't
your
get
help on
any
the,
of
the small you know, business exemption. You will be the small business hero.
I went down to try to my farm credit to find out how big I had to be before I was too big to fail. And they told me I had to be a little bit bigger. So, you know, while we're bailing out the big boys, the 92% of the small businesses across this country that are hiring people and are the hope to get this economy turned around is end up paying the bills on everything. So,
great.
Well,
thank you for the inquiry. Were you wrapping it up with it and you got an amendment you're going to share with us?
Yes. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. President, I have an amendment that's been distributed. I request a waiver of the reading.
Hearing no objection.
It is the amendment.
The waiver is granted. Senator from Howell.
This is an attempt to be a compromise to take our 92% of the small businesses in this state that fight for the right to just try to make a living and supply, employ, like I said, 92% of the people. It enables the person that writes the checks to make the decision on whether he can afford this or not. You know, this amendment could be the difference between him deciding not to renew his insurance policy and sending more people to the uninsured, but it allows the small business owner to make that decision. And I'll answer any questions tonight or renew my motion.
Okay. Senator from Howell, move for the adoption of Senate Amendment 4. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 2nd, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, I'd like to speak against the amendment.
Proceed.